This is Casey Currents. I'm Susan Wilson.
And I'm Sylvia Maria Gross.
Over the past several months, Kansas Cityans were shocked by a couple of high-profile cases of child abuse. A couple left their mentally ill teenager handcuffed in the basement with little food. And back in July, another couple was accused of locking a 10-year-old girl in a closet. To hear about how these situations can possibly happen, we spoke last week with social worker Joe Beck, who's the vice president of the Midwest Foster Care and Adoption Association. This week, we hear more from that interview. This mother seemed to single out one of her three children to abuse. Tell us about that dynamic, since you've had a lot of experience working with families.
Frequently, whenever a single child has been targeted, there's something about that child that the parent identifies as the cause of the problem. Maybe it's who that child's father is or mother is. Sometimes it's those children's specific behaviors. But they sort of target this loss of control and associate that with this specific child. And in an effort to create a balance back in their life, they target that child, and they become the victim of abuse in that situation.
Now, this case has raised a lot of questions about the child abuse system. Back in February of 2006, this mother admitted that she withheld food from LP because she was concerned that the girl was going to the bathroom too often. And at that point, the state took custody. But the family was reunified then in 2007. So I guess my question is, what about family reunification? How do they really know that a family is suitable for having a child reunified?
I think family reunification is a challenging area for public child welfare professionals. There are some indicating factors that lead social workers and the courts to believe that parents have rehabilitated or have learned the skills necessary to provide for a child. One of the challenges with family reunification is all too frequently there's not enough follow-up to see what happens after the case is closed. Once the court is no longer involved in these families' lives, who's tracking and watching to see that they're continuing to apply the skills? One of the factors that we believe is critical in family reunification is a parent's ability to accept responsibility for their own behaviors. What was the thing that I did that caused my child to come into state's custody? And how can me and my resources solve that problem and other similar problems in the future? I think all too frequently the system is overburdened. There's not enough social workers out there to follow every case. And when parents meet the demands of the court, I think all too frequently they're left to their own devices, and sometimes they learn to fly under the radar so that they're not noticed again. I don't know the specifics of LP's case, but I do know that she was reunified, and it appears that there wasn't enough done to follow up and make sure that she was indeed safe.
Yeah, because a month after unification, it said that she kind of disappeared, and there wasn't any follow-up. Now, the other thing that was interesting in this case was the LP disappeared completely from school. So what is the role of the school in following up when a student just leaves school, not heard from? And this was a five-year period we're talking about.
Schools have a responsibility to report suspected abuse and neglect. Missouri has mandated reporter laws that indicate who's required to report. I don't know if the school did indeed report the absences, but a lot of times parents will figure out ways to answer those questions, saying that they moved with a relative out of state or they moved into a different school district. And again, the state has finite resources in following up on some of these issues. So it's definitely a challenge to ensure that kids are safe whenever parents have learned how to work through the system and answer the standard questions.
There are a number of cases in child abuse reports about boyfriends, the role of boyfriends. And the case of LP was no exception. The boyfriend was charged recently for contributing to the abuse. What dynamic do you see with these boyfriends in terms of the role they play in abuse situations?
I think it varies depending on the specific case. Sometimes the boyfriends step into these situations and the parent is managing a situation and it's not their child, so they're resistant to comment. Frequently, again, abuse is about power and control, and parents looking to create a balance in their life. It's not unusual for single parents to be looking to have a second income earner in their home or having a romantic relationship that contributes to the balance in their life. So adding the challenges of relationship dynamics on top of an already challenging parenting situation can be very difficult. So sometimes the boyfriends may become the disciplinarian or the abusers. The mom says, my kid's out of control and I need some help. And so the boyfriends will step up and become that disciplinarian. The unfortunate thing is there's no history with the child or parental tie. And statistics tell us that children are far more likely to be abused by people who they're not biologically related to. So I think that creates a unique challenge.
Are there other factors that we should be thinking about in terms of what caused parents to abuse children?
The parents' own childhood and what their experiences were growing up. We learn to parent by the people who parented us, and we tend to repeat the same mistakes of our mothers and fathers. So depending on what those parents' child own experiences were in being raised can contribute to that. We also have to look at the expectations of the parent. Do they understand what kids should be doing at different times? Do they understand developmentally what is the kid supposed to know and understand? We have to look at support. What's going on in this family? A lot of times families lack the support and the resources to solve their own problems. And I think that is a huge contributor. We can't overlook the influences of alcohol and drugs. Parents who consume alcohol or use illicit substances have reduced inhibitions. So maybe they have some understanding of where the line is not to cross, but then using drugs and alcohol a lot permits them to cross that line without much thought. And then last but not least, what's going on with the child themselves? What psychological problems may the child have or developmental issues that they have? That's kind of a twofold impact because parents have to go through a grief and loss period. When we think about parents who are becoming parents with a new baby, they have expectations and they want their child to be a certain way. But then when that child's born and maybe they have some unique challenges, parents can go through a grieving period and a loss period that they're no longer going to achieve their dreams of parenthood with this specific child. The flip side of that is they have additional needs that your typical child doesn't have. And so trying to find a way to meet those needs with your limited resources can be challenging and can push parents right over the edge, so out of control that they try to control their children in an attempt to have equilibrium in their lives.
Now, we've all heard about the unfortunate aftermath of abuse and the impact that it has on children. Are the severity of the symptoms that child abuse leaves for a child tied to the severity of the initial abuse?
I think it depends. Each case is so unique. What we know about trauma is that the amount of support that someone receives right after a trauma reduces the long-term impact. In our child welfare system, we move in to protect children. We take them out of abusive situations. And what we're finding as we watch this more and more is that that removal sometimes creates additional trauma that the child now has to overcome. A lot of times kids who are in adverse living environments have no idea that what they're experiencing isn't typical or normal. Their family culture says this is how this is supposed to happen. So one of the unique challenges now for the child welfare system is really understanding the impacts of the trauma of the abuse, but also understanding the impacts of the trauma of the removal from abuse and a placement in a different family living environment where maybe now their needs are being met and they're experiencing positive parenting for the first time. That can be very difficult for kids when they're not used to that and they don't expect it. And we can't forget kids love their parents because they are their parents. There is a bond between children and their parents that can't be replicated. So when you remove a child from someone they love, there's grief and loss associated with that, traumatic grief and loss of that child from the parent who maybe was the abuser. And I think a lot of times that's difficult for people who have not been through the experience to understand.
Now, as we think about remedies, one of the things that was helpful in both of these cases is that someone hotlined these cases. But isn't it the case that sometimes people are really reluctant to get involved and make that hotline call?
Sure. In our society today, we frequently live in our own little isolated silos. We get up and we go to work and we manage our own balance and our own equilibrium. We don't know who our neighbors are. We don't spend a lot of time as a social community. And when we live like that, it's difficult to offer support to somebody that you don't know. So they're resistant to call. I don't want to get involved. It's not my problem. But what we are finding as a society is it is our problem. It creates social problems that we're going to have to address as a community as a whole.
Recently, there's a new Joint Committee on Child Abuse and Neglect that involves a number of Missouri senators, and I know the goal is to improve child welfare. Based on your experience, what would you tell them about improving the system? We've talked about some of the gaps.
I think that we have to look at the finite resources that are available to support families. There's a huge push in Missouri now on early education, which is absolutely critical for kids to be set up to be successful. But we also have to look at the realities of our economic times. Families who are struggling with finances are much more likely to struggle with power and control issues within their home. Stress is one of the leading factors in predicting whether or not a child will be abused, and one of the leading influences in a family's measuring family stress is their economic status. We need to do more to support the families and to ensure that they have an access to services. And the access needs to be non-judgmental. People change their behavior because of relationships. And so we have to create a system where social workers and helpers work to develop and build positive relationships in a non-judgmental way to help alleviate the barrier for accessing services.
Joe Beck, thank you for being with us today on KC Currents.
Thank you.
Social worker Joe Beck is the vice president of the Midwest Foster Care and Adoption Association. You can hear the first part of this interview on the KC Currents page of our website at kcur.org.
If you can't listen to all of KC Currents today, catch what you missed online in our audio archives. And we've got a podcast. Find us on iTunes.